It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The attorney general's race is commanding less attention than this year's battle in Wisconsin for governor and the U.S. Senate. But the state's attorney general is poised to shape issues ranging from abortion rights to voter access. As Sarah Lear reports, Democrat Josh Call is trying to keep his seat by framing the race as a fight to protect freedoms.
At a Planned Parenthood rally in Middleton earlier this month, the theme of the evening was taking control. Attorney General Josh Call told supporters that Wisconsinites lost control over their health care decisions when Republican lawmakers refused to repeal a 19th century law that bans abortions except those done to save a pregnant person's life. And the crowd booed when Call described how legislators blocked a plan by Governor Tony Evers to amend the Constitution so voters could eventually overturn the ban by statewide referendum. But Call, who's running for re-election, says Wisconsinites can still exercise choice on November 8th.
The stakes in this midterm election could not be bigger. Reproductive freedom is on the ballot.
Call's suing in an attempt to get a judge to block Wisconsin's abortion ban. In the meantime, he promises not to charge providers under the law. That's in contrast to Call's Republican challenger, Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney, who says he would enforce it. Call, the son of former Wisconsin Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager, won his last race 4 years ago by less than a percentage point. Paul Nolet, who teaches political science at Marquette University, expects another very close election. He says it could come down to a fight for focus.
Which of the candidates and which of the campaigns is able to fight on the ground that they're most comfortable with?
Like other Republicans across the country, Toney has focused on crime. And as Nolet observes, Call keeps talking about abortion rights.
He really wants to make this a referendum on, as he kind of puts it, you know, the nature of freedom here in Wisconsin. So thinking about like reproductive rights freedom and the freedom of the vote.
Call pledges to prosecute threats against election workers, and as AG, he fought attempts by Republicans to overturn the 2020 election results. He's also been a reliable ally to Evers. That includes defending the Democratic governor's COVID-19 mandates and siding with him in legal disputes over the boundaries of Wisconsin's new political districts. Toney, meanwhile, accuses Call of mismanagement at the Department of Justice's Division of Criminal Investigation, known as the DCI. He points to staff vacancies and a slowdown in evidence processing at the agency.
We need an attorney general that's actually going to make public safety the top priority and clean up the mess that Josh Call has created at our Department of Justice, at our crime labs, our prosecutors, and DCI.
Call says he expects to be at full staffing by the end of the year. And he says analysts are becoming more efficient at handling increasingly complex cases, despite underfunding from the Republican-led legislature. Toney has also been trying to paint Call as soft on crime, an accusation that Call says is absurd. He cites his time as an assistant U.S. attorney in Baltimore.
I was a federal prosecutor in one of the most violent cities in the country, and I prosecuted murderers, drug traffickers, and gang members.
Call has used the spotlight of the attorney general's office to push for gun control, and he's decried what he's described as attacks on voting rights and reproductive choice. Other campaigns are grabbing more attention than his, but Call is trying to remind voters that they still have a big choice when it comes to the race for attorney general. Sarah Lear, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And Wisconsin Public Radio will have a story tomorrow about Call's Republican challenger, Eric Toney. It is the State Capitol Report on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The ad tracking firm AdImpact expects political ad spending this cycle to surpass $9.6 billion nationwide. What does the deluge of ad buys look like here in Wisconsin? We unpack the TV ad wars with Election Day a week from tomorrow. Join in on how the political ads make you think, how they make you feel, 800-642-1234. Donald Green is a political science professor at Columbia University, studying the ways in which political campaigns mobilize and persuade voters. Donald, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Good morning. J.R. Ross, also here, editor of WisPolitics, has covered Wisconsin politics for over 20 years and co-hosts the state politics podcast Rewind on Wisconsin Eye's Public Affairs Network. J.R., welcome back.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. So, JR, you're tracking political ads this cycle. How often are Wisconsinites seeing ads? What is it like out there?
A lot. According to Ad Impact, we've already seen $219 million spent on ads in the Senate race. Another $123 million spent in the governor's race. It is.
I have to stop you there, JR. We're having some backfeed issues. I'm going to hopefully we can get you on phone here right away. I want to turn, though, to Donald. And, you know, Wisconsin being a hotspot for the political ads this season, what is that like for a state?
Is that even people who are, you know, considered low propensity voters for those who target ads are getting a ton of ads this time. And it's in part due to the fact that there's a feeling among campaign consultants that nobody's very persuadable anymore, that people have hardened their partisan attachments to the point where they're just not crossing over and splitting tickets. So the fight is really for weak partisans or independent voters.
How much do all of these ads, whether they're negative, whether they're positive, how much do they matter, Donald?
You know, surprisingly little. I think that when you throw a number like, you know, $9 billion, you'd think, wow, these are really influential. But actually, when social scientists do randomized experiments to evaluate the effectiveness of ads as a way of persuading voters, they're shocked to find how weak the effects are. For example, a recent review of 49 such randomized experiments concluded that in general elections, the typical ad buy has close to no impact. So it's really quite an interesting industry in the sense that ad buyers typically get a commission of something like 8% for the ads that they buy. So if you're running a super PAC that's putting $10 million worth of ads, that's an extra second home for you.
Wow. So could a candidate's choices about which type of ads to run, if it is a really tight race, can that at all swing an election?
Yes, it certainly is enough to influence a very close election. So it's not as though ads have no effect whatsoever. It's just that if you thought, well, how much money does it take to swing one vote? Typically, the number is something like $200, $300, and that fails the trail of dollar bills test. You know, if you simply put a trail of dollar bills between the voter and the voting booth, you'd probably have a better chance of influencing votes.
JR, let's go back to you here. What is the impact for Wisconsin? Can you give us a bit of a breakdown on these political ads?
The spending in the Senate race has been overwhelmingly in favor of Ron Johnson between what he has spent and the people backing him versus Mandela Barnes and those backing him. However, in the final month of the race, the spending is about even. In the Senate governor's race, it's the opposite, actually. Tony Evers and his allies have outspent Tim Michaels and his significantly from the day after the primary through today, and that will continue through the election. It's interesting because if you look at the polls, there's a bit of a gap between the Senate race and the governor's race. Now, I always argue polls are polls, take it for what they are, right? They're a snapshot in time. There could be margins for error, but we see a slight gap. And is that because the power of incumbency, that Ron Johnson and Tony Evers have that incumbent's attraction to people? They know who they are. Or is it the spending where because Michaels has been outspent by such a significant amount, he's having a hard time catching up to where Ron Johnson is in these polls and is helping Evers stay in a neck and neck situation in what could be a difficult environment for Republicans or Democrats another week?
You have such institutional memory. I'm wondering, have you seen cycles like this before when you have such intense advertising, whether it be on, you know, TV or digital platforms?
I keep thinking that money is a finite resource and eventually it runs out. I keep being proven wrong cycle after cycle. The price tag just keeps going up. And part of it is you're not necessarily trying to persuade independents one way or another. You're trying to also motivate your base. There is a theory about campaigns that it's really about your base. If you turn out the people who are open to your message, that's your best bet. And I don't know what elections will look like a week from today, but if it's a base on base election, you're seeing base messages in these ads, abortion on the Democratic side, crime, inflation on the Republican side. Yes, there's some appeal to people in the middle, but it's also about those partisans making sure they turn out on election day.
Let's take a call now. Elijah with us from Appleton. Elijah, what do you think of these ads?
I'm personally kind of I get sick of them as soon as I see them. I just annoy with them. It seems just seems like there's so many of them that it's just it kind of gets a little annoying after a while.
So do you find that they have any effect on you once you've seen them once and then again and again and again? Do they have an effect?
No, I basically learned to just tune them out because I really just don't care one way or the other.
Donald, you know, Elijah saying just tuning them out now, what kind of effect does that have on people?
You know, very little. I think that what's interesting is could Elijah, if we asked you to recall some of the ads you've seen, you know, how many can you recall, even the ones that you've seen again and again or heard again and again and again? I mean, that's one of the things that causes these ad buys to be so overwhelming, because the theory among campaign consultants is that people won't remember the ads unless they've heard them, say, half a dozen to a dozen times. And so this partly accounts for the, you know, ocean of ads that everybody sees almost to the point of annoyance. And the question is, if you've gotten to the point of annoying people, are you really going to persuade them?
We analyze political ads before our eyeballs, the ocean of ads, with Columbia University political science professor there, Donald Green, with politics editor J.R. Ross with us as well. Join in on ad themes, patterns you notice, how negative ads affect your thinking about a particular candidate or race. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we tour through the TV and digital ad buys and their influence, the Wesleyan Media Project said recently that Wisconsin's gubernatorial race, along with Nevada's, are the most negative in the country. That is, having the highest percentage of ads classified as negative or pure attack. Join in on what you notice with political ads ahead of the midterms, 800-642-1234. We have WIS Politics editor J.R. Ross and Columbia University political scientist Donald Green. They stay with us. So, J.R., let's turn to the gubernatorial race here, governor's race. And polls show Democratic Governor Tony Evers and Republican challenger Tim Michaels locked in a tight race, as you mentioned. Last week, Michaels aired a new ad criticizing Governor Evers.
The lessons I learned growing up in Brownsville still ring true today. Work hard, take responsibility, and do your best. But that's not happening with Tony Evers. Evers released Wisconsin's worst criminals, killed jobs, paid people not to work, and he let so much more go up in flames.
So, JR, you know, Michael's there criticizing Evers over releasing criminals and, you know, killing jobs. What do you make of that ad?
Oh, Michaels is the challenger. He doesn't have to present a record. He has to give, like, these general, you know, ideas of what he would do as governor and try to disqualify the incumbent. So that's what he's trying to do with his ads. He's trying to talk about, you know, weak leadership, in his words, from Evers, and try to knock him down. I have to say, though, I do believe negative ads work. And I can tell you a story about why with my own household. In 2012, in the Senate race, remember, what was the tagline that Tammy Baldwin had about Tommy Thompson? He's not for us anymore, right?
Not for us.
Now, as I cover campaigns about right now, I'm so in the weeds of like what's going on, I like lose the big picture sometimes. My then 7-year-old child locked in the living room as I was watching TV one day. There's a Tommy Thompson. Tommy Thompson's on the TV. He walks in the room and looks at me and goes, "Tommy Thompson, Daddy, he's not for us anymore." Now, if a 7-year-old gets the tagline from an attack ad, it tells you that they sink in. If you do the right, you do it the right way and repeat the line over and over again, it hits, which is why Evers is saying Michaels is divisive and radical. Johnson is saying that Mandela Barnes is dangerous and different. They want those lines to sink in. That's a constant theme in these ads, is trying to get that one tagline to sink in and take hold of the voter, because it works.
Donald, what do you make of that repetition and the pure attack nature of these ads in this race?
Well, one thing to observe about the ad that you played is that it's relatively rare in negative advertising for one candidate to be the spokesperson for a negative ad. Usually it's some third person who's neither one of the candidates. But in this particular case, it's kind of interesting that the candidate himself would own the ad. And to the extent that candidates go in that direction, what's interesting is that they're trying to play on what political scientists sometimes call valence issues, as opposed to position issues like abortion. Valence issues are about, you know, whether you're on the forces of good. And so killing jobs is bad, and you wouldn't want to do it. And so advertising that you have negative things to say about the incumbent on the grounds that things are going badly or that the candidate is incompetent or harmful, but without specifics in terms of ideology is a way to appeal to everybody. And in a year that's thought to favor Republicans in general, that's not a silly strategy.
Talking with Donald Green, political science professor at Columbia, J.R. Ross with us, editor of WispPolitics.com, as we look at political advertising in this midterm ad cycle. You can join in at 800-642-1234. So let's move on here. The Wesleyan Media Project ranks Wisconsin among states with the most attack ads, as we've said. And let's hear an ad Governor Evers and the Democratic Governors Association released this month attacking Michaels over allegations at his family business.
At a company, the culture comes from the top. Tim Michaels' company has been sued numerous times over sexual assault and harassment in the workplace. Women who worked for Michael's company said they were groped, assaulted, and pressured to have sex with their bosses.
Jer, what do you make of this attack ad against Michael's?
So again, you know, Michael's is a challenger. He doesn't have a record. So he is running to disqualify Evers and to say, I'm a better alternative. What his record is, though, is his company, right? His private sector experience. This is trying to attack him on that private sector experience and disqualify that experience as a qualification to be governor. It's also part of the reason why the Michaels people don't want to see Donald Trump come back to Wisconsin in the final weeks, because Republicans are trying to win back those college-educated suburban women who were turned off by Donald Trump. Evers is trying to hold on to them through the abortion issue. Ads like this attacking Michaels Corporation for the sexual harassment lawsuits. If Trump were to come back to Wisconsin in the next 8 days, there's a risk it would remind those voters that folks are trying to hold on to of why they don't like Trump. Oh, by the way, Trump has endorsed Michaels. It would not be a great thing for Michaels in their mind, the campaign's mind, to have Trump come back.
Donald, what impact does a Trump endorsement have, do you think?
I would say that J. Ross has got it exactly right, that it's a polarizing thing. There's no doubt that that maybe 90% plus of Republicans are going to vote for their party's candidate. So there's no reason necessarily to stir up people who have misgivings about Donald Trump on the other side. I would say that to the extent that Trump's visit would be helpful or Trump's endorsement would be helpful, it would be getting the base out. But I think that the base is already on alert here, and it's unlikely that they will fail to notice the importance of the election. So probably not a good move on balance.
What about these political action committees pouring billions of dollars into these ads? And some say, you know, the massive spread of these political ads was the result of the 2010 Citizens United versus the Federal Election Commission ruling. Is that the reason we're seeing so many ads? What do you think it is?
Is this for me or for Jared?
I'm sorry, for you, Donald. Yes.
Yes, I would say that you're right that Citizens United is one of a series of court decisions that has essentially opened the floodgates to massive so-called uncoordinated spending. So super PACs are able to spend almost unlimited amounts now. And you might say, well, that ruling doesn't in itself unleash a lot of spending. It's just that as Titans, donors on both sides are increasingly determined to overwhelm their opponents, the net effect is, you know, massive funding of super PACs on both sides. And it's a great time to be a campaign consultant, really. It's a booming industry. The amount of money that is flowing through their coffers is going up extraordinarily rapidly. So that I would say it's partly a court decision, but it's also partly a fact that the nationalization of American politics has made it so that every political professional is now calling on donors to support a kind of jihad against their opponents in every nook and cranny in the country. And Wisconsin is really ground zero for that kind of battle.
Political scientist Donald Green studies American voting behavior at Columbia University. J.R. Ross is editor of Wispolitics as we explore the deluge of political advertising and campaign media tactics with the midterms 8 days away. Join in on what ads you find offensive, misleading, ads you find effective or emotionally compelling that stick with you. 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In the home stretch of the midterms, Democrats and Republicans are bombarding the airwaves, just inundating us with very different messages on life here in Wisconsin. The Wesleyan Media Project told WPR recently that our state is an epicenter of political advertising on TV. Join in how you view these political ads. What comes up for you this ad cycle? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Wispolitics editor J.R. Ross is here and Donald Green, a Columbia University political science professor. Let's go to Anissa now in Black Creek. Anissa, hi. What comes up for you in these ads?
Yeah, so given the current political climate and such extreme accusations between both sides of the political party spectrum, I was wondering if there is a reputable fact checker that voters can access to see which ads claim to be true or partially true or not true at all.
Anissa, thank you. JR, where can you go to fact check?
You know, it's interesting, like, you know, like Gannett does a fact check, you know, gives things ratings like Pants on Fire or Mostly True, that kind of thing. But I guess conservatives don't trust it, right? I mean, people don't trust the fact checkers anymore. So it's hard to say, like, I know various TV stations in Wisconsin have done fact checks on ads, like if it's true, needs more explanation, or if it's false. It's one of the difficult things in the media right now that people don't really trust us a whole lot. But I would say that, you know, they do their best and they do a good job of explaining the basis behind the ads. So those are places that I would go to look for more information.
Donald, is there any legal requirement for the content of these ads to be factually correct?
No. You know, it's a First Amendment kind of free for all. And so you can say more or less whatever you want, as long as you're saying it about so-called public figures. And the public figures here are the opponents of these political candidates. So it's pretty much a bare knuckle affair.
But in TV land, they at the end of the ad, you hear who paid for the ad. That, I would imagine, is regulated.
Yes, you're supposed to say something truthful at that point.
You know, what would you tell someone who's watching all these ads if they do want to do fact-checking, if they want to pick through what they're hearing in these ads?
Sure. I would say that, again, not every ad has been fact-checked, but to the extent that you want to look at the ones that have, you could go to factcheck.org or AdWatch PolitiFact or, you know, any number of kind of watchdog groups. As JR said, that, you know, there's going to be partisan sniping about any fact-checking operation, but you can sort of read the debunking yourself and see what you think. The nice thing about fact checks is at least they lay out where they got their sources for why they think things are false or misleading, and you can take that under advisement yourself.
Anissa, thanks for the call. Good luck with the fact-checking. Jeff now in Milwaukee. Jeff, hi. What's on your mind?
Well, what I find interesting about the political campaign ads is to listen and think critically about what they're saying and how they're saying, and to try to poke holes in that. And the one that you did with Michaels talking about his small town values, and he lists things like take responsibility and work hard, what jumped out at me was that what was missing was honesty. He's, you know, and in that particular commercial, he lists the pants on fire of the governor releasing criminals. That, you know, PolitiFact has already declared that. And he refers to burning things down. And I have seen fact-checking that says that the governor was actually pretty quick at sending the National Guard in. And I just thought it was and also paying people not to work. Well, what Governor Evers did was to pay people who couldn't work because we were afraid of killing people during COVID when we didn't understand quite how it was all working. And I just found it fascinating that one of the small town values wasn't honesty.
Jeff, thank you. Donald, Jeff has really picked apart that particular ad and found there isn't honesty that is underlined in the ad. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that Jeff is right in the sense that it's absolutely crucial to be a kind of critically minded consumer of these ads. You know, when one candidate makes kind of veiled accusations about the other candidate, especially in you know, these kinds of dog whistle ways of, you know, killing jobs or releasing criminals, you know, you have to understand that there's going to be a reality behind that that, you know, is probably not being given an honest portrayal. So I think that to the extent that you can think critically, the so much the better. I would say when you're thinking critically, remember that Republicans and Democrats feel that they own certain issues. So Republicans want to talk to you about crime and releasing criminals, and Democrats want to talk about issues that are associated with healthcare or sexual misconduct. And so when candidates go to their base, they are typically, as Jared pointing out, going to mobilize them using those issues.
Jer, what about the Milwaukee voting influence? Researchers found that during a two-week span last month, more than 8,800 political ads ran in Milwaukee, and they addressed the races for the U.S. Senate, House, governor. How might Milwaukee influence the midterms?
Well, significantly. It's interesting, looking at the ad impact data, Madison is barely seeing any ads compared to Milwaukee. Milwaukee is kind of rarely where they are targeting for a number of reasons. Obviously, it's the biggest media market, a lot of people that live there. I've watched a Packer game on a Milwaukee TV station and a Madison TV station. It is a vastly different experience right now watching the Packers, even though they lose pretty much every time I watch them. There's just a lot of stuff going on because you have just so many people there, and those are the key people to turn out, right? Suburban voters in Waukesha County, right? Republicans, that's been their base, the heart of the GOP for so many years. But they've been slipping away a little bit. The numbers are still really good. They're just not as good as they used to be. Democrats, they need Milwaukee to turn out. Democrats have struggled in midterm elections for years to get Milwaukee voters to turn out in big numbers. It's why Obama went to Milwaukee this past Saturday to try to juice turnout. That's what they're trying to do. Now, I bring up Madison a little bit because it's interesting. Madison is such a Democratic market. It's dominated by Dane County, right? You're not seeing as heavy an influence from Republicans in terms of ads being run. They're trying to target voters otherwise, because you risk, in some ways, I've been told as a Republican, inflaming the Democratic base by running ads in Madison. Tim Michaels is running less than $50,000 in ads in the Madison market the last few weeks of the campaign. I've never seen that before. Now, he has other groups that are doing ads on his behalf in Madison, but he's trying to target voters in the Madison market a different way. Again, I think it's because they're trying to avoid reminding Democrats that, you know, about Michaels, because they see all these negative ads running on the market.
We're talking about these political ads. J.R. Ross with us, editor of Wispolitics, and Donald Green, political science professor at Columbia University. You can join in on the ads you're seeing, what impact they have on you, 800-642-1234. We're going to turn now to the AG race, attorney general's race. In an ad supporting Democratic Attorney General Josh Call, National Sheriff's Association president and former Dane County Sheriff Dave Mahoney says the incumbent is a, quote, real prosecutor who goes after criminals. Here's the ad.
I was in law enforcement for over 40 years, and I can't imagine a better attorney general than Josh Call. He's a real prosecutor who's locked up murderers, serial rapists, the really dangerous guys you want off the street, and kept them behind bars. And he'll work with anyone, Republican or Democrat.
Donald, how influential are law enforcement endorsements?
I think they're quite influential, especially in relatively low salience races. And to the extent that the speakers are sort of playing against type, audiences perk up and take notice. So, for example, if you have a kind of card-carrying, certified, expert, veteran police officer attesting to the the bona fides of a Democratic attorney general, that assuages the concerns of Republicans who think, well, he's not tough enough. And so in some ways, both sides want to use this tactic because it's a way to build what social scientists call source credibility. These speakers have a lot of credibility with audiences.
Donald, I've heard political scientists say before that every down ballot race can prove really critical when you have this highly polarized, highly charged political environment. Does that extend to an AG race?
Certainly, especially now, because attorney generals are being thrown into the front lines of a lot of these partisan disputes insofar as they are prosecuting candidates for either campaign violations of various kinds or other kinds of conflicts of interest, or sometimes the allegations about fraud and election misconduct end up in their lap. And so these campaigns that used to be, relatively low salience are becoming higher and higher salience.
We're going to hear now the ad from the Republican Fond du Lac County District Attorney Eric Toney, the challenger here. This features the mother of a girl who was abused and murdered. Here's the ad.
It was Halloween. My daughter stopped at three homes, her girlfriend's house, her teacher's house, and the man that murdered her. He molested her and he put her in a garbage bag. He was going to be released in 2018. Josh Call, he was not there for me at all. You want some help to find out.
JR, how does this ad fit into themes you're seeing from the candidates in the attorney general's election?
Eric Toney's trying to undercut the law enforcement credentials of Josh Call, that he is a bad incumbent and we should disqualify him. What's interesting in that race is the lack of spending compared to other races. So looking at the final 2 weeks of the AG campaign, they're on track to spend less than $6 million combined. That means Josh Call, Eric Toney, the group's backing, everybody. Tony Evers and the group's backing the governor's race are going to spend $6.5 million the last week of the campaign alone as of today. And that could go up, as they make the final adjustments. And why I bring that up is because this is the hardest race that I'm covering this fall to get a good handle on, because the question is, can Josh Call, who has a significant advantage in terms of campaign, in terms of TV sort of paid media, can he create a unique identity beyond the generic ballot? Eric Toney's being vastly outspent. So the going bet is he is going to be dependent on a good Republican year. If Tim Michaels wins the governor's race, for example, that's probably the best bet for Eric Toney to win, because it'd be a good year for Republicans in general. But can Call, with the superior fundraising and resources, can he create that unique identity that he could beat back against a good Republican year and win as a Democrat? That's the thing that people have a hard time figuring out, because think about the noise you're seeing on TV right now and radio and digital ads. How much noise can these guys make with $6 million, over the last several weeks? It's just not a whole lot compared to what you're seeing from the governor's race and the Senate race.
Was Politics editor there, J.R. Ross, on campaign TV ads? Was Politics has an ad watch, by the way. And political scientist Donald Green looks at the ads through the lens of whether they make an impact on turnout and the ballot box. Still time to join in on these political ad wars, what you see in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. This is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is a State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Outside groups not affiliated with a candidate are able to spend unlimited amounts of money on ads in a political campaign. Do you think this kind of spending should be limited by law or stay unlimited? YouGov America polled on that question precisely in August. Among Americans 18 and older, 3 out of 5 feel there should be political ad spending limits for groups not affiliated with political candidates. Still time to talk about these ads, what they do for you, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have J.R. Ross, who is Wispolitics editor, and Donald Green is here, a Columbia University political science professor studying voting behavior. Let's turn now to the third congressional district race. J.R., last week, a Democratic PAC focused on House candidates cut its ad reservations for Brad Paff's third congressional district run. And the polling site, 538, gives Paff a 16% chance of winning over Republican Derek Van Orden. How much does losing PAC support affect Paff's chances, do you think, J.R.?
Oh, it's significant because he doesn't have the money himself to go toe-to-toe with Derek Van Orden in terms of paid media spending. That's been an interesting district for Democrats all along. Ron Kind has held it for 26 years, but Democrats nationally are just basically doing triage. They're actually investing, I saw this morning, in a plus 20 Biden district. They're putting money in there right now because they are seeing bad signs in their polling. And they're trying to minimize the damage. So they are not investing in open seats like the third. They're not going on offense in many places. They're trying to defend incumbents and in some cases, deep blue districts. So PAF has kind of been left on his own. There was a PAC that went in about 3 weeks ago, did a $500,000 buy, knocking Van Orden about being at the Capitol January 6, 2021, trying to drive that message in. In my experience, when I see buys like that, usually a group does a poll before they run the ad. They run the spot, and they take a poll afterward to see if it moved people. And if it works, I will, one, see a poll showing me that they believe it works, and two, I'll see more of a buy. They didn't come back in after that. It tells me that that ad buy didn't really move people, and they're just having a hard time in a Trump plus five district finding a way to make that competitive. It's just, it's a very tough spot for Democrats right now.
Donald, what do you see in testing on these ads beforehand, before they hit the air?
Well, I think that the characterization of the ad, you know, pre-post is exactly right, that typically there will be some testing using survey methods where you'll randomly assign respondents to hear one ad or hear nothing and see whether that moves their so-called ballot test question. So if the election were held today, would you vote for A or B? And to the extent that those numbers look good, maybe you raise the money to do an ad buy, but what you're hoping to see in the ad buy itself is a pre-wave that is done before the ad, show lift as you go to the post wave after the ad. And if you don't see that, you tend not to see that ad anymore. And that doesn't mean that the ad doesn't work, but it certainly casts some doubt on whether it's working enough to lift a candidate, especially an overmatched candidate, appreciably. I think that the other point that was made is extremely important, that as the pendulum swings against Democrats, they have to basically focus their energies on holding on to their incumbents, and they could lose quite a lot of seats, as was true, for example, in the first Clinton election in 94 or the first Obama election in 2010. They could lose control of the House and Senate quite easily.
What about reaching people who never watch traditional cable or never watch broadcast TV? Because we're seeing this Nielsen data that streaming is becoming the most highly viewed TV medium in the country. Donald, what do you see occurring with targeted ads on streaming platforms like the ones that my kids are watching?
Yes, I noticed that when I was watching the Packers highlights this morning, I was just inundated with ads that were specifically targeted to me. One of the advantages, well, or disadvantages, depending on your perspective, of digital ads is they are able to target people quite narrowly geographically. And so that's in some sense the wave of the future. But the thing is that those ads are not only annoying on their own, they're especially annoying when they interrupt, come in the middle of a play. And so I can't see them winning the affections of voters very easily. And indeed, the randomized trials that I've seen on digital ads have been very disappointing, notwithstanding their growing popularity.
What do you mean very disappointing? Put that into context for us.
Well, when I've seen randomized trials, they've essentially randomly assigned different zip codes or different precincts or different gender age precinct combinations to treatment or control. And then they've looked to see whether those precincts voted in a materially different way than the control group precincts. And the answer is apparently not. And that's also true for a lot of survey research that is looking for lift as a result of an inundation of ads. They just don't seem to produce a lot. And I think that little fact is a kind of inconvenience for a lot of campaign consultants, because they, although they really are eager to buy digital ads, there isn't very much evidence to suggest that they're producing a harvest of votes. So what would be the alternative? The alternative would be more of a ground campaign. That's not really what campaigns want to spend their money on, or campaign consultants want to spend their money on, because that's not really a very profitable enterprise. So part of the problem that we have today is that in some sense, the market is tilting ever more toward things that seem to be relatively ineffective. And when candidates lose, they might wonder where their money all went. And the answer is, it went to things that are largely unproven.
Well, JR, you have the last word here. We only have a few seconds left. In these days ahead of Election Day, what do you anticipate? Will these ads still ramp up?
Oh, there's going to be millions spent in the final days. We're looking at a Senate race that, when it's all said and done, is going to be north of $218 million. A governor's race that is, and it's just in paid media, a governor's race, about $123 million just through paid media. The numbers are growing every cycle. It's an intensity. It shows you what's at stake. And also, it shows you the influence of mega donors. Diane Hendricks, the white billionaire, has given $19 million to Wisconsin Truth Pack, which has been doing stuff for Ron Johnson. A California doctor has been making six and severe donations to the state Democratic Party the last couple of years, which then the party can transfer to Tony Evers to help his campaign. The money is amazing and never ending, it seems like.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thanks for having
us.
Anytime. J.R. Ross is editor of WisPolitics.com. Donald Green is a political science professor at Columbia University. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kend. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.